Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show tonight, and I can feel my feet again. I think I've recovered from NAMM. It was a great show. I was really impressed, but it was a lot of walking, a lot of standing. And are you recovered now, Monique?
Yeah, I didn't bring a step tracker, but I know I did miles. Miles.
But it was a great show, and we have a great show for you tonight. But really quick, this week you've been working at your new bench. How's that going?
Excellent. I'm excited. Didn't know quite where I was going to end up, but I did set up at Valley Sound Tech in North Hollywood. It's at 5527 Cahuenga, and it's the shop that I worked at before. Mm-hmm. I'm back with my old friends, Zita and Stretch. They own the shop. Mm-hmm. Great people, and have great techs in there. So it's not just me. It's everybody in there is awesome.
I saw a picture on Facebook of it looked like a humbucker on a Les Paul. What was that about?
Which?
It was like a, was that the, that, what have you been working on? What, tell us about some of
right
the
now
stuff.
I'm actually working on a 12-string. It needs everything. A new nut. New saddle, mm-hmm. installing a Fishman pickup in it, tweaking the neck. Mm-hmm. It needs a whole workover. And it's one of those nice worn out ones, mm-hmm. from the 60s or the 70s. Nice guitar. So that's the project I'm trying to finish up right now.
But, okay, we'll take pictures and
yes,
post them.
I will take pictures.
Because she does some really interesting stuff. But that's cool. And give them the information where they can get all of you. It's by appointment only, right?
Right, by appointment only. You can get a hold of me at 818-309-0781, or you can email me at momo.allaboutguitar@gmail.com. And I'm on Cahuenga between Burbank and Magnolia. So okay. Nice and close to Hollywood.
Yeah. No, that's cool. Yeah, if you need, I mean, I can't praise her enough for what she did. She fixed my Les Paul, so it's great. It's really good. Anyway, let's get on with the show. I met Andy at the LA Amp Show a while ago, and we checked out this. I forgot. Somebody had told me about the pickup. Like, you got to go check this out. So we went in there, and I met you. And I was pretty blown away what he was doing. The technology was kind of interesting. But setting up the show, and we had talked about having him on the show back then, and it just finally worked out where we could bring him in, and I wanted to give him a little bit of a chance to recover from NAMM. the pickup is interesting, but I started digging into his background and stuff, and you got a pretty amazing background. I want to talk a little bit about that, because it all kind of sets up a little bit what I think you're doing with the Little Thunder pickup. He was the lead guitarist for Drake Bell, which was part of there's a group on Nickelodeon called Drake and Josh, if I'm correct. And then he now works as the online marketing director for Favored Nations, which is Steve Vai's company. But he also, with Steve Vai, co-founded Guitar TV, which was a web-based all-guitar video thing where you're streaming videos of guitar. And I think that's amazing. So, and it's good. The more stuff we have of guitar. So anyway, welcome to the show, Andy.
Thanks so much.
Tell us a little bit about your, let's go a little bit farther back a little bit. Let's talk about your influences and how you got into guitar and how you got into marketing. Cause you're kind of doing, it's interesting. They seem kind of different, but at the same time now, more than ever, it's more important that you, it's very important as an artist that you know media and how to market yourself in media. It seems like you just happened to have the two combination, make it right.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. And by the way, thank you so much for having me on the show.
This is exciting. It's my honor.
Appreciate this. And, you know, it's funny. It used to be kind of, I would have to separate those two worlds. So we can talk about my influences, but certainly what you just brought up, how, you know, in advertising or in business, sometimes it's not really great to tell people that you're a musician, right? Because that maybe comes with something,
right?
Whatever it is. And conversely, in music, sometimes you really can't tell people easily that, you know, you have a business sensibility or you have to get up in the morning to do whatever it is. So for a while, they were just two totally separate paths that I had going on in my life. And then gradually they started converging. And exactly as you mentioned, A Little Thunder is the convergence of both of those worlds.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, yeah, your question, influences.
Well, let's
right?
talk about your guitar, where you came from, what you listened to, and where you, you know, where's your playing, what's your background for playing?
Yeah.
Because we're going to have you play a little bit to demonstrate.
Okay,
the band.
Yeah. Well, my dad had a 1964 Gibson B25N.
Very cool.
Guitar. Love this guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And he would take it out occasionally and, you know, play some Peter, Paul, and Mary songs or, you know, kind of. But he had this one lick, and it was like this cool lick that had kind of like a, almost like a Chet Atkins-y vibe to it. And his sense of time was really good, so it's like you could really feel that something interesting was happening. And I think I'd seen him do it two or three times, and one day I just kind of like, you know, he played it, and I mimicked it, and he was, you know, I guess it was enough to be like, hey, we should get this kid a guitar. So my parents bought me a guitar for my 9th birthday.
Well, you got to show us the lick.
Oh, yeah. All right. Here, I remember that one.
I mean, he's talking about a lick. I got to hear it.
Is this on?
You're on now.
Let's see. It was... And then
that's very cool.
And he'd stick out his lip. And I love that. I love that so much. It was the most fun thing to watch him do that. I was like, oh, my dad's a guitar player. That's amazing. I didn't know that.
That's very cool.
But, yeah, he can play way better than me. But anyway, within, you know, two or three, like, kind of mini lessons, he was like, all right, let's get him a guitar, get him lessons, you know, and all that stuff. So that started for me when I was 9. And around the house, we had a lot of records. Jimi Hendrix was my favorite artist to listen to. It made me bounce off the walls.
Was your dad into Jimi Hendrix?
Loved Jimi Hendrix. Loved Led Zeppelin. Loved the Doors. You know, the Beatles, certainly. The Rolling Stones. So a lot of classic rock in the background. And it was so much fun because we had a stereo, but, like, we didn't really watch that much TV. We definitely... You know, and so my challenge was always to play along to the radio.
That yeah.
was, I think that's really how I learned to play guitar, just by playing along to it. But, yeah, so that was kind of the basis of all of my interest in guitar, especially, was hearing these crazy riffs and just the energy of it coming from the speakers. It was awesome. And, yeah, we went to a lot of rock concerts together. So, you know, in the early 90s, you could go and see Jimmy Page and Robert Plant. You could see the Stones. You could see Steve Miller. You could see Santana. We went to see Jeff Beck. You know, and most of those acts are still playing now, amazingly. But back then, it was really something fun to go to with my pops. And my mom would go, too, of course. But my dad, you know, we knew every song coming up, and I knew every key it was in by then. We were really, like, communicating on a different level and stuff like
that's
that.
That's kind of cool. You were able to, you know, you and your dad were able to bond like that, or even your mom. I mean, yeah. I think that's, I mean, my dad was like into Sinatra and stuff, and I wasn't into that. And it's like, I mean, I respected him, but, you know, we'd play the Beatles, and he's like, ah, that noise, you know.
Well, you'd have Al Viola, right? Or Ron Anthony, right? There, he was with Sinatra.
No, they had, it was good stuff, but I mean, I remember, I'm dating myself, but I remember watching Ed Sullivan and watching the Beatles on there, and my dad was like, okay. Yeah. My brother was real into it. I, to be honest with you, at first I thought, okay, it's all right, but it was all, what's all the screaming about?
Yeah.
It wasn't until later that I appreciated them more, and I loved the movies. The movies are great. But, you know, it was interesting when seeing them for the first time. And a lot of the stuff you're talking about, the Doors and Zeppelin, when you first heard them, it was an interesting, because nothing was like that before.
Yeah. The two things that kind of brought out, so there was that basis where it was like, I love classic rock. I really knew what I liked at that point. But I think when I saw some of the guitar parts in Back to the Future, it flipped me out because it was doing like harmonics and bends and all that stuff. And it was really bananas. And I was like, oh, man, like, I want to play guitar in front of my high school and get girls and, you know, do all that stuff.
Yeah.
And that was, you know.
Well, actually, he went in Back to the Future. Some of the stuff that, he was doing wasn't. They didn't play like that.
No, definitely not.
It was like totally, you know, they were taking some art. Because I'm like, I don't remember people playing like that back in those days.
I remember the scene. I don't remember the guitar. What was he playing?
He was using a 345 or something.
Yeah, and I think there was like this thing that was recently posted about the 345 not coming out until like 1958 or something like that. So it wasn't period correct, for the movie, but it still was awesome.
No, my favorite scene in that was at the beginning when he's at the doctor's house and he has that giant speaker.
All right.
He pulls out that guitar. My friend has that guitar.
Yeah.
He bought it in an auction.
Oh, the Chiquita.
It was like an Ibanez type of guitar or whatever. And he takes that guitar, hits the power cord, and just blows him across the room. You know, the speaker explodes. But it's the speaker's like 8 feet high. It was really, it was funny.
Yeah, but seeing those things and seeing all the Guns N' Roses videos, really, it was just like, oh, so what I knew about guitar I already liked. But then seeing, you know, the kind of maybe a new generation doing it and being like, you know, 10 or 11 or 12, it was just like, okay. So this is still a real thing. This is still happening.
So you were basically, your influence was basically classic rock and a little bit like you were playing some kind of like a country type of thing from your dad there.
Yeah. It was almost like
like a Chet Atkins thing or a Merle Travis type of, which is interesting because that type of finger and thumb, or what you're using, your pick and the fingers, it kind of sets up a little bit the evolution of the, I think, of Little Thunder, where you're using that style. Embraces the pickup really well.
And I guess I never really put that together until right now when you said it. You're right. Having the separation with your right hand and having the octave span, it's almost like having two hands on a piano. Mm-hmm. One part's doing the low end, one's doing the high. So,
And I was talking to somebody before the show about Brazilian music and where they use the bass, like a root and fifth going. And then they're doing like counter rhythms on the fingers, like even on a gut string or even on electric. But that it's perfect for what you're with the pickup. So anyway, okay, well let's get into the pickup then. Let's talk about that and how that evolved.
Sure. Well, I guess the first instance and the first idea was I was playing with a drummer and I just wanted to be able to keep up because they had powerful arms and powerful feet, and they were you know, really getting into it. And I, as a guitar player, felt no matter how loud I turned up, we weren't on the same level in terms of at least, you know, the gut feeling of it. So I was like, you know, instead of bringing a third person into this equation, I'd really love to figure out a way to beef up the sound. But I wouldn't want an octave pedal because that would affect every string. And also, I wasn't thrilled with the way octave pedals sounded. They always sound to me like a kind of like an organ imitating a bass. There's no like string action. You know, when you slap the string, it doesn't quite react the same way.
Right.
So anyway, I had done, you know, I feel like with electrical engineering, maybe I know just enough to be dangerous or something to that extent. But within like a week, I took apart a guitar and I wanted a special pickup. And I had developed through a board called like a BeagleBone Black. And it was a DSP development board. And I was able to like put the first algorithm together and used it. And it sounded pretty darn good. And it was like, wow, okay, this actually does work and it is interesting. It didn't have any of the features of a Little Thunder, but it sounded pretty good. So I started a band with a drummer, a separate drummer called Swimming in Trees. And it was just the two of us. Mm-hmm. And I was playing guitar and bass and singing. And Alexa is her name. she was playing drums and keyboard at the same time. And then we were also live looping, and, you know, it just became like, how much work can two people do? Yeah. You know, how much can they juggle? So the live shows were kind of a case study with, you know, here's this duo doing these things. What's the vibe? And we wrote some songs. We played some shows. It was really fun. And I was encouraged to pursue making a product, a physical hardware product. You know, and at that point, Guitar TV was actually not even launched yet, but that was a software product. So developing software and developing things for the internet, so different than hardware, where I had absolutely zero experience.
So for Guitar TV, what did you what was developed? It wasn't like a just a standard YouTube type of thing?
No. So Guitar TV's premise was and is, it's a 24-hour online television station that just plays guitar videos, factory tours, interviews, best of, original content, and whatnot. And at any given time, it has the ability to go live and do a live broadcast or a live interview or whatever. But within the video player, and this is something that Steve had conceived many years before we even met, but he bought the domain name guitartv.com like 10 years before we came together and did this. But the idea would be to be able to purchase the products being shown within the video player while that video plays. So if you're watching Jimi Hendrix, you can click on his Stratocaster and buy a Stratocaster. You can buy his, you know, if there were concert tickets, you'd be able to buy the concert tickets. You'd be able to buy the amplifier, the accessories, download the tablature, buy his music on iTunes, etc. So kind of all around, you'd be able to, you know, come up with an interactive, immersive experience. So, yeah, that was the concept with Guitar TV, is that it would be kind of this thing. And, you know, we had some crazy stats right when we first launched. And so the funny thing was that Guitar TV was in its emergence. It was in its development with software. And then I wanted to make a Little Thunder. I mean, I didn't know what it was called, but I knew I wanted this guitar and bass situation pickup. And I'd never seen anything like it. So I applied for a patent, you know, and I wrote a patent, a provisional patent, which is like, you know, a pretty simple document, maybe 4 to 8 pages, that describes what your invention is and how to make it. And then you include a couple of CAD drawings, basically, and you have that on file for a year. And you have 1 year to submit a non-provisional patent to the USPTO, which is a much more involved document that's like, I think it was like 30 pages or something. Wow. Like that. So, and so it was really funny because, like, I had to look up even the other day something from that time period, and you'll see, like, the email is, it's like, okay, here's the IP attorney I was working with. Then the next thing was Steve's manager. Then maybe the next one was something with Drake Bell, because I was touring with him right then. It was like everything just hit at once. And so it was like, well, I've got a pretty clear schedule. Time to rise to the occasion, get this product in, you know, in its inception going, keep working with Steve. I was also his online marketing director right when we started working on Guitar TV anyway. So it was just like a lot of juggling, right? But I realized how much I love guitar and how everything was centered around, you know, the instrument and the love and the passion for playing. So, yeah, it all kind of came from that. I don't know if that answers your question or not at all.
Well, you had a year to develop it. Now, when did you set up the Kickstarter? You had a Kickstarter program to fund it?
Yeah. So basically, the patents got issued for Little Thunder and for a guitar and bass combination pickup. And, you know, it was kind of like, it felt like assurance, because I knew that I had not run a company with a hardware product before. So to me, it was assurance. It was, you know, this idea is protected. It's unique. And, you know, it can take a minute to get off the ground. So it wasn't like a rush to market, you know, with watches, smartwatches. If someone across the world thinks of it, you know, Samsung thinks of it, Apple has to respond within a certain time period. Otherwise, they lose that market share, right?
Right.
So having the IP secured felt, you know, like there was a little bit more time to get the thing together, right? So I launched a Kickstarter in October of 2014. And right before that, I had called every guitar player I knew. I told them I had a guitar invention, but I did not tell them what it did. And they came over to my apartment in Echo Park. I said, "Do you mind if I film your reaction?" And they said, "No problem."
So you had a prototype.
I had a prototype, yeah. And it was in a James Trussart Steelcaster. And instead of having capacitive touch like the current model has, it had like a little button. And so, or a switch actually. And I said, you know, they'd play a little bit and doodle, and then I'd say, okay, now flip that switch. And the reaction was like, whoa, okay, this is crazy. What? You know? And so I tried to capture that with video, and the Kickstarter explained what the concept was. It was a guitar pickup that you put in any guitar. They didn't need to route the guitar. There was no 9-volt battery. There was no modification physically to the guitar. You put this guitar pickup in the guitar, and you have the ability to play guitar and bass simultaneously by taking the bottom two strings and converting them by an octave below or two octaves below.
But how do you power it if you don't have a battery?
So it's built into the pickup itself. It's got it's got a lithium polymer battery built into the pickup. And mm-hmm. there's a micro USB charge port built into the pickup. So the battery lasts about 2 weeks when you charge it. And so you don't need to worry about the 9-volt, but because it's a hyper-efficient processor and it's married to the magnetics, there's a lot of advantages. Not only are you getting zero latency because it's all married together, but you're getting a very power-efficient situation because the field of the magnetic coil is directly going into a very efficient DSP. So basically, I looked at my iPhone and thought, wow, this thing is capable of doing a million things. It's awesome. There's GarageBand on the iPhone. You can have a recording studio. You could turn something into your friends and say, hey, listen to this. I made it on my phone.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, if the phone's doing this and these parts are available, it's going to be really interesting to put something together that mimics the processing power, but it's specifically for this function.
Now, if that lithium battery goes out, it's easily replaced?
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, we offer a lifetime guarantee replacement on the lithium polymer, but it's a very ultra-high, it's a prism cell ultra-high-density lithium polymer battery that you can recharge up to 500 times without losing more than 15% degradation. So we did a lot of research on parts, and it, you know, basically...
Because you're too new to find out how long it lasts.
Yeah, but they're rated. We're not making the battery. There's battery companies
that
make that. So,
but we have to wait for 20 years to see if it dies.
And when it does, you send it in. We'll send you a new one. But yeah, the idea is that it's all encompassed, and you don't need to worry about the installation is so easy. It's three connections with solder, and two of them were already on your guitar in your old pickup.
Right.
So it's all very straightforward.
That's interesting, being passive like that too, actually. Yeah. I mean, it has a battery in it, but I mean, it's simple.
And if the battery does go out, you know, if you forget to charge it or something, I'd say two things. One is it still functions as a guitar.
Pickup is still the same.
Right. So there's, in A Little Thunder, there's also an 8.2K PAF Alnico 5 humbucker. So if you put it in like the neck position of your Les Paul, you're not missing out on that position of your guitar. You're still getting an 8.2K DC resistance PAF in the Les Paul.
Mm-hmm.
But when you touch the side, you're getting the added bass signal.
Do you make a single coil version of it? Or?
So we're working on one, actually. It's really funny you mentioned that. It's coming along really well. There's obvious challenges because of the form factor is different. And the electronics are already very small, but we're talking, you know, microtizing those electronics.
Wow.
So it's a very interesting discovery. So,
well, let's go ahead and let you demonstrate it so people get a really good idea what's going on.
Okay, well, you know, this is the guitar by itself.
Now, he's using, just so you know... he's got a fractal in, and we're running direct into the board so we can really hear the low frequencies of the bass. And so it's direct in. There's no amp here at this point. But it shows us really what the depth and the range of the pickup is.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was the guitar signal like that. When you touch the side of the pickup, just like this.
You're touching where, on the treble side?
Yeah, actually on the bass
top.
Side.
On the
yeah.
top. Hold on a second. Let me take a picture of that. So they can see where it is. And, that's cool. All right, so point it where it is.
Yeah, it's this little orange LED light that indicates what mode you're in. Right now, this mm-hmm. would be, as soon as I play, it'll be minus one octave. So what you're about to hear is the electric guitar, all six strings, and the bottom two strings being an octave low. So here's...
Now, when you're synthesizing, is it getting that octave below, mm-hmm. is it pulling the harmonics from the string? Is it actually pulling the frequency?
So, yes. Yes. So it's directly married to the coil. So these are Alnico 5 magnetics. They're so warm, and we chose them because of their warmth and response, and the field, of course, too. It's a very focused field. So when you play a little thunder soft and gentle, you kind of get like a very, you know, warm...
Yeah, it sounds almost like an upright type of thing.
But if you were to kind of slap it, you'll get a totally different sound, or even pull it. Now, let me demonstrate that one better, because I can turn down the volume knob on my guitar and get just bass. So this is that same example. Okay, I'll do the same thing then, but I'll slap it.
It gets a great pop sound.
Yeah, and you can set up a bass channel anyhow you know you want. You get a dedicated signal for the bass, so you can send the guitar portion to a guitar amp, and you can send the bass signal to a bass amp, and that's when it really is, I think, most efficient, because their bass cabinets are voiced a certain way, and they have the power of a bass amp, you know, 500-watt bass amp, so it can really move. And guitar players, so far from what we've heard and what we know, it's like you're not used to having that kind of power coming from the guitar. So when you play a chord or when you play a note, it's just like this huge kind of all-encompassing
sound. Well, that's
the
thing. You're grabbing the overtones, and it's an interesting sound. Whereas a traditional octave box, like a little pedal, they don't really have... They synthesize it, and it's not the same. It doesn't have any character to it.
We examine what... basically some of the most top octave pedals were doing. You know, we put them on an oscilloscope and looked at all the things, their sample rate, their chips, and all that stuff. And we found that they really actually were falling short. These were outdated parts anyway. So they weren't capable of doing like 300 or 400 MIPS, which is millions of instructions per second. So we found
there's no
latency whatsoever.
That was a problem with the early ones. There was the latency.
Right.
There was latency. They were late.
Yeah, and I think you can feel that, and it affects you in a creative sense. But with this, it's, you know, we're really proud of how it came out. It really is very instantly responsive and right under your finger. So I could show you the couple different modes. So we just played this one here. That's minus one octave on the bottom two strings. Okay, when you touch the pickup again, it drops it by two octaves, the bottom strings, and you get just such a low.
So technically, that's an octave lower than a standard bass.
Right. And if I roll off the guitar volume, which I think maybe based on the bounce, you can... It's got that. Very sub-bass.
Yeah, that's down there.
Yeah, it is. And when you touch it again, it turns off. It's back to being a guitar pickup.
So it's off one octave, two octave down.
Yeah, exactly. Now, there's another mode, and I can't wait to talk about this because, you know, I was excited when a Little Thunder's patent was issued, and it was, you know, certainly exciting to know that this was a unique creation because, you know, you can see through history the idea of having a guitar and a bass together were somewhat out there. When I researched it, I found guitars with, you know, it was a double neck guitar. One was a bass neck, and then the other one was all six guitar strings. Mm-hmm. So it was like very cool, but that's not very practical. And you'd also see things like two bass strings and four guitar strings, which is cool, but then the scale length gets off the higher up the neck you go, and the intonation changes. And so it was like, that was kind of interesting. And obviously, I didn't know that to begin with, but the idea was there, but having it all kind of encompassed. Now, here's the challenge. When you play a guitar chord, right, with the bass of a Little Thunder activated, okay, it's very thick because you're getting a fifth. If you play like a, you know, a power chord or even a full bar chord, that's not how bass players play with both of those notes together. They play the root note usually. So I created a mode on a Little Thunder called low note priority, which senses the lowest of the two strings you're playing and only gives the bass effect to that note, that string. So with it engaged, which it is now, there's a little yellow light that lights up. And now when you play a chord, it's so much more clean.
Yeah. Oh, that makes it a lot easier. Yeah,
and you can hear the difference. Here's with it on. here's with it off.
Yeah, it's not as it's a little, it muddies it a little bit,
and it doesn't add any latency to the.
No, that's pretty responsive. So that's really fast.
So yeah, the idea was to try to come up with different ways that people would use it, and that would maybe lead to somewhat of a demonstration. Because when I put the Kickstarter out, first of all, we should say that it was amazing. The response was incredible. The Kickstarter video alone was shared like 27,000 times on Facebook, so it was really cool to see that.
Well, you know, I think there was there's a need for it. I think that a lot of players that play little casuals, that's a really hip thing to have, where they're playing like a light jazz type of thing, especially, or a folk type of thing too, because the pickup, you can put it on an acoustic guitar, as I understand. Yeah. You have a special mount.
Yeah, we have a special little acrylic mount we sell for $25 on the website, on littlethunder.com, and you can put it right in there, and it works perfectly with steel string guitars, nickel string, and bronze blend strings. But yeah, the idea was to see what people will do with a Little Thunder. So the Kickstarter was great. It was successful. It was a 30-day campaign. We raised something like $63,000.
Now, what was that, to tool it up, or was it?
Yeah.
Because you had already designed it, right?
I had already designed it, and everything was working, but, you know, basically, you know, you got to buy, the more parts you buy in bulk, the
right.
less expensive they are,
right? You needed
money
to get
right?
it, so you could buy it in the end.
Right. So we identified some really great partners, all within Los Angeles and in Anaheim.
Cool.
Yeah, 100% made in the U.S., this product. That makes me proud to say.
Awesome.
And, yeah, the quality control is really high. So we found these amazing factories that do subcontract work for Boeing and NASA and, like, really high-grade aerospace the industry that we're in here in Los Angeles is film and entertainment and all this stuff. But the perimeter has a lot of different industry, and that's one thing that they have. So,
and a lot of them have had budget cuts, so they're hungry, which is
yeah.
good for you.
So, you know, I walked in and I said, well, you know, here's what I'm looking to do, blah, blah, blah. And they said, oh, you know, we can use even the way we pot the pickups. It's not wax. It's a very high-grade varnish that's used because these transformers that they have to make have to survive in space for 15 years and throughput 8,000 watts. It's amazing.
Whoa.
And so the kind of varnish that they use is like a very high-grade, space-grade varnish, and it goes through a reflow oven, all this stuff. So we got to utilize all these techniques that really weren't employed in the guitar world previous to this. And we think the result's just a fantastic sounding and very functional, you know, result.
And that high quality, too. Your consistency must be incredible.
It is. And, you know, it's, if there's ever an issue with the factory, I'm there within an hour, less, you know. So, you know, a couple times I was like, what's this one doing? Let's take a look. Oh, here's the issue, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, we're able to have that kind of hands-on approach, whereas I think if you make products overseas, it's a big challenge because there's a six-week delay between them, you know, finishing up the product and shipping it and then customs and all this. It's really complicated, and they can't ship batteries, products with batteries, at the same rate that you can do that in the U.S. So it's like they have to send two at a time. It's a crazy thing.
Yeah.
So long story short, I'm really proud of the way the pickup came out, and it was community-based to begin with.
That's cool. That's very, very good. Now, if you have a because you have a chip in there and you have software algorithm, is that easily updatable?
I'm glad you mentioned that. Yes, actually. We're about to release our first firmware update, and it has some very special surprises built into it. You know, the idea that this is a pickup is great, but I always saw it as a platform that has, you know, there's a micro USB charge port on it, and that's how the battery charges, but also performs data transfer. So something's coming for our customers, a free upgrade that does this, that, and the other.
Can you talk? You can't talk.
There's a few things coming up. Maybe we could talk about one of those features. I think that would be fun to talk about here. So I'll get right into that. But, yeah, the idea is that, you know, you hook up one end of a USB cable that we ship with to the pickup and the other end to a computer. You double-click downloaded software, and it performs an update within about 15 seconds.
Very cool.
So, yeah, then you unlock this new feature.
So it's not, it's not outdated.
Yeah, and we looked at a lot of different things. You know, Bluetooth was one, or RFID stuff. You know, it's very interesting now what you can pack into a small space. And but, you know, we ruled out certain things because there's interference, and there's, you know, when you're at a concert and if you're trying to control something with, like, for example, Bluetooth is historically unreliable. If you're playing a crowd of 30,000 people and someone's off stage trying to control your anything, you know, your earbuds with an app, they may not even pair with 30,000 people's cell phones in the crowd.
Oh,
so
yeah.
There's
an inherent challenge. Little pulse, too.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, well, here's what I should do maybe just to help people out there listening. I want to demonstrate a couple of different styles of this. And based on our previous conversation, I'll try to play something that has that Chet Atkins kind of a vibe.
Okay.
So these are some of the things that I think can be done with Little Thunder. And
get a Bigsby on your bass every day.
Yes. So that'd be one. And then in low note priority, the strumming is, you know, effective because you're only getting a kind of the root note. So if you're playing an open G chord, you know, you can strum along.
Now you're at one octave or two octaves down?
I'm one octave below.
Okay.
Right now.
Yeah.
And that's the mode that I think most customers and I will play in. But the reason two octaves below is great is because you can play higher on the neck but still be really low in range. And maybe I could even play that. But, yeah, just the strumming idea, you know. So, you know, someone singing and accompanying themselves
mm-hmm.
will have that huge room sound. And also, a Little Thunder handles detunings really well too. You can, you know, drop to any. That's a B.
Now, the output, because you can have a separate, you can have the bass isolated.
Right.
Do you have to modify your jack in the guitar to stereo?
So we do ship with a stereo jack. Yeah, that is one thing that, you know, gets unscrewed. But the nice thing is it still accepts any mono cable just the same. So you don't have to.
So if you're not using it and you're just using a regular cable, it'll just be another guitar.
Just functions exactly. Yep.
Very
cool.
And
then you have the option of using a single quarter-inch stereo cable to send both signals to one amp, or you can use a TRS-Y cable that we have on our website. It's like $5 or $6, and that's what I'm using right now. The guitar channel goes to the guitar amp. The bass channel goes to the bass amp.
Oops.
Whoop. And so you know it's a kind of a fun experiment too, because if you have, you know, you have these two outputs in your TRS-Y cable, you can put effects pedals in the bass signal. So you could have, you know, an envelope filter, a compressor on the bass signal, a wah-wah pedal, a volume pedal. You can do all kinds of different stuff
mm-hmm.
Just from having that.
Mm-hmm.
So let me switch guitars here. I'm going to play the Strandberg, and it is an awesome guitar.
It's a very interesting guitar.
I literally just got this guitar. I met up with Ola and Ed through my friend Polini,
mm-hmm.
who was visiting from NAMM, who, by the way, is one of my favorite musicians now. We were talking about, you know, a Little Thunder, and I looked at their guitar, and it's clearly the future of guitar building, just the shape, the ergonomics,
mm-hmm.
the neck feel, the fan frets. They make all kinds of different
models. That's right. It is. It's very subtle. It's not as obvious as some of the other guitars I've seen.
Yeah.
But the fan, they fan out.
Yeah, it
very
is.
Very interesting.
So I'm going to grab this guitar so I can play some.
This guitar was a Trousseau?
This is a James Troussard guitar. It's a Steelcaster Deluxe. It's got a Bigsby and an Arcane pickup in the bridge and then a Little Thunder in the neck. Maybe one other thing worth mentioning is that you can use a Little Thunder's bass section in conjunction with any other position
mm-hmm.
of the guitar pickup.
Mm-hmm.
So you can use the bass, you know, sound with the bridge pickup or the split sound or just the neck pickup of the guitar. So it's kind of like you can...
So if you switch to the treble pickup, it'll still give you the bass pickup?
Yeah. So...
Well, you can go to the other. If you want to switch, it doesn't matter which guitar you use.
That's right here. So, yeah, the idea is that, you know...
So what are you using now?
That's sounds about like an E.
Yeah. Okay. So which pickup is that?
So this is the bridge pickup in conjunction with the A Little Thunder in the Neck. So you're getting the bass from the A Little Thunder in the Neck.
Okay.
Now when you split...
That's both pickups?
Yep. And then, of course, you can just do just the neck. Knock this guitar way out of tune, but yeah, so you can choose between
That's very cool. So the bass is the bass output, if it's on, is always on.
That's right, you just flip the switch and it goes directly to the stereo jack,
whether you're switching to the regular Alnico in the regular circuit.
So the interesting thing too is, like, we just met up with Kurt Rosenwinkel, who's one of my favorite jazz guitar players, and he said, hey, I'm in town until like 2 days from now. Can we put A Little Thunder in the guitar? Put it in the bridge position, because I hardly ever use the bridge pickup. And I said, yeah, because he loves his neck pickup. So with A Little Thunder in the bridge, you get the bass signal, you know, and then you get the full neck guitar.
Well, does it, now that's interesting. Putting it in, and while we're talking, you can go ahead and switch your guitar. But using the, using it in the by the bridge, did that affect the sound of the bass? Because actually, I mean, you know, like a if you're using like a jazz bass, the difference between where the pickup is loaded is located is dramatic.
Absolutely, it you get a little bit more attack on each pluck of the each string with it in the bass position. I'm sorry, the treble position. You know, there's not as much string movement there. But it just so happens that A Little Thunder is usually located right where the 24th fret would be. On a guitar in the neck position, and there's just so many harmonics right there, and it can be you know, kind of a naturally sounding big bass sound there.
Right.
So I think there are certain kind of players that will put it in the bridge, and then there are certain kind of players that will put
it
in the neck.
But it still gets pretty deep. It lose the...
Yeah, Zane Carney, who's actually a great, amazing guitar player, he plays with John Mayer, and he's done a lot of other things, but he has his own solo career. He just played at the Troubadour, and we put his A Little Thunder in the bridge position on a Sur, and it sounded awesome. I mean, you know, people, including myself, were kind of freaking out when... I'm going to turn the... Here, you can take a picture.
I'm shooting while he's talking. This guitar is great.
It's a really cool guitar. I'm just, like, over the moon about it. And it plays with ease. I've never really played a guitar quite like it. But when Pliny had his, he played at the Dunlop booth, and he played at Strandberg's at NAMM. And I got a little two-second glimpse of that guitar, and I thought, wow, this is so interesting. This is, to me, it is the future of guitar, so... I love the idea that our products are...
Now, I'm going to post a picture of it before you play it. Just describe what it is, because there's no headstock. The tuning keys are on the where the bridge is.
Yeah, the tuning keys are where
the
bridge
is. Like a Steinberger.
Exactly. There's, although it's much... I think I've found it's much different. It's got this cool zero fret.
Right.
And then it's got these stainless steel hex, you know, locking nuts kind of at the top.
Locks on there.
Yeah, and then you pull the string through so it's got some tension on it, and then you just twist at the bridge.
I'm going to try to grab the headstock so you can see it with the zero nut, and then I'll post these up.
Yeah, and look at the neck. This is so crazy. This neck has
a very
unusual profile. And it's patented. Ola designed this neck.
Stick it up like that. Yeah. I'm going to try to get you so you can see the shape of... Oops.
Yeah, it's a very interesting, like, but it's all with ergonomics, designed with ergonomics in it. So the marriage of A Little Thunder with this guitar,
it's,
I think you're about to hear.
It's just, not a, it's not like a standard rounded neck. One side's, it's a little bit, it's got a little bit more cut into it.
Yeah, I think the Strandberg, I think it's StrandbergGuitars.com. They have a lot of info on the neck.
How do you spell that?
Strandberg,
STRANDBERG.
And this is the Bowden OS, Bowden 6. They make 6, 7, and 8 string guitars, and it's just an awesome instrument. So here, I'm going to play something with a little gain on it.
Okay.
And this is...
So it works when you crank up, too.
Yeah, here we go. So, this will be that sound. How are we on volumes?
I'm just... It's got more output, but I got the bass, so it's not distorting, so you can hear how clean it is.
But, But all these riffs just seem to work so well with a little Thunder.
We lost it. Oh, there you go. So Mo, when you do Led Zeppelin now, the bass player will always be tight.
Right, I'll go always my telly.
So, and then, you know, of course, when you drop a second octave with a setting like this, you can just guess. So it depends on the style of music you play, but you can definitely access kind of a heavier, you know, you can go deeper than an 8-string guitar on this, especially with it going through a bass amp. So you've got, you know, maybe it's like an equivalent of a 10-string guitar when you drop two octaves. But yeah, I found the guitar and this pickup to be kind of a perfect marriage. They sound really good together. And,
save money on strings, right?
Right. good positive there. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, it really depends on what kind of styles players are going to approach it with. And I think that, you know, having the ability to keep the bass signal clean if you want, but also dirty it up if you want by having its own signal chain, just leaves the possibilities to... Yeah. Anyway. But yeah, that's...
No, I mean, it's interesting. If you're playing, like, in a trio and there's, like, keyboards, if you're doing power chords and stuff, you can hold your own and function as the bass player, too. I mean, it does lend itself for that.
Yeah, yeah. And I've seen... I went to see a band, and this was really one of my first experiences back in July of actually seeing a Little Thunder live. There's a band called Lithuania. They're out of Philadelphia, I think. And... they were like, hey, we're using Little Thunder tonight at the Troubadour. We're on tour. Mm-hmm. Do you want to come? And I was like, oh, absolutely. You know, so I was at Will Call picking up my ticket on Sunset Boulevard, and I heard some band, and I'm like, oh, darn, I must have missed them, because there was so much bass coming out that I was like, oh, the next band must be on, and it sounds like maybe four or five people playing. I'm like, oh, what am I going to tell these guys? And, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I walked in, and it was Eric Slick, playing a Little Thunder. And it was him and another guitar player and a drummer, and that was it. And I was like, at that point, I was like, I'm ready to cry a little bit here, because it sounded so good, and he was doing something with it that was different than what I was doing with it, and it filled up the whole room. I think it was at the Roxy. That's where it was.
Yeah, the Roxy. Stuff.
But anyway, it was just so cool. It was so cool.
So if you tapped Mo, you could do the Billy Sheehan, Steve Vai thing where they tap and sync. It'll be all.
Yeah,
you. That's could, the thing you, is yeah, it, right? It's you really could, tight, right? You know, since right. It tracks so well.
I think you probably could. I'm probably not the right person. Let's talk about that real quick. So what happened was I started on the A string, and then I went to the D string. Okay, check it out. The newest firmware of a Little Thunder, and this is, I guess, somewhat of an announcement. When you press both of the sensor areas at once, it activates a third coil baked into a Little Thunder. So you get a D string as the bass signal, not just the E.
Very
A.
cool.
So that way you get, you know, you get that riff again, right? Huh? That was me hitting the switch, but yeah.
Now do this: play a tenth. So you're playing. Oh, I don't know if you can. No, they have to have the fourth string, because a lot of bass players will play like if you're at the third fret G, they'll play on the fourth string. They'll play the high B.
Okay, let's
so
try
you know
that.
What I'm saying. So you or but actually, what you can do if you're popping and you, I don't know if you want to use this with distortion, is you can do the climb in the octaves, boom, bum, boom, bum, boom, bum, so, know, that kind of thing. Oh. No, play bass, G octave, boom, bum, and climb up, go up like boom, da, boom, bum. Yeah.
I mean, I know there's probably a policy here, as everyone, but if you played Stairway to Heaven, you'd have that you the D string the whole way. Anyway,
nice.
So yeah, just the idea that you can now activate different modes.
Yeah, now, and I want to point out too that the you know, he's using electric guitars here, but think about it in terms of, you know, finger picking on an acoustic guitar, because a lot of finger picking and folk and stuff like that, the bass and the root and the bass, you know, or actually do like a little bossa nova thing to
yeah,
show them the
yeah, why not?
Root and fifth. But think about that, because that's this does that, and it'll track on an acoustic guitar with bronze, 80-20 bronze.
And maybe if I split the string a little bit. Here, let's move this chord a little bit. Okay.
And I think that's a lot of guys that are that do casuals, that's important, because it just gives them a little bit more.
Yeah. Did you check out the angles on the frets on that?
Yeah, that's the fan frets. But it's subtle. Yeah. Most of the ones I've seen are much more exaggerated than that.
Right.
Yeah, and I think it compensates for the intonation and stuff. I mean, everything sounds in tune on the guitar. The higher up you go, even the better.
Well, it's tracking. Since you're tracking the guitar itself, so it's going to be in tune to itself. Which is great, and you're always, the bass player is right in the pocket every time, so.
Nice.
Well, we're out of time, as I knew we would, but can you give us information on how to get the pickup, where it's available, and go ahead and give all the information.
Yeah, I mean, the easiest way to get A Little Thunder is through our website. It's www.alittlethunder.com.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of videos of different kind of players and genres, exampling the guitar and the pickups, of course. So there's that, and then we have a great Facebook page where a lot of people post pictures of the guitars and videos.
A Little Thunder, right?
A Little Thunder, yeah. It's facebook.com/A Little Thunder. And we have an Instagram and a Twitter, and you can find it just by probably typing in A Little Thunder as well. But yeah, and it's interesting, those NAMM shows, the amp shows, you know, people are interested in offering distribution, that, you know, in, especially in other countries. We love being in touch with our customers directly. So when so-and-so from, you know, Australia orders A Little Thunder and they get it a week later because, you know, it takes a couple of days to ship. But we're right in touch with them right along the way. I love that relationship because I know all these people now.
Yeah.
You know, oftentimes my customers...
Well, that's good. You're approachable. And if there's an issue, you can, or if you need information...
Right, right.
You can talk to the guy. That's rare. Yeah, you don't see that as much now. But I think that's really great.
I love that. That's one of my favorite parts of it because it feels like a community. You know, My premise is that I think the guitar is ready and ripe for innovation, and this is my first product, but I've got a lot more in my mind that I'm already starting to kind of.
Well, we're going to have you back again. I want to see what these other firmware updates are.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it. And Mo, thank you. I'm glad that everything's working out.
Oh, yeah.
It's springtime's coming. It's time to fix those guitars, everybody.
That's right.
I want you to fix them. Yeah. So everybody,
no slacking during the summer.
Yeah.
Slow during the summer.
Everybody have a great week, and we will see you next week.